Hey, good morning. Welcome from the Ronscott Communications Center. We are live. This is From the Stand, and our program today is supported by the CAF, the Commemorative Air Force. The mission of the CAF is education, such that generations of Americans will value and support the contributions of military aviation in assuring our nation's freedom. Visit the CAF tent in the southeast corner of Boeing Centennial Plaza or visit them online at commemorativeairforce.org. A great show in store for you today. We're going to be talking with some ladies who are in aviation, and also our friends to the north, the Canadian Snowbirds, and we look forward to that. Right now, joining me is a very special guest, and very, very pleased and honored to have Florence Schutze Reynolds with us today. And Schutze, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
You know, I've been coming to this show since 1981. That was the first year that I was at Oshkosh. And I have learned through the years that no matter how many times you've been here, you're going to run into someone who's been here more than you have or has a lower EAA number than you have. And in this morning's case, it's a brand new thing. It's day six or day five, six, whatever. It's Friday. I'm starting to get a little tired, right? And then I meet you. You're 94, and you're so full of energy, and you've been here all week, and you've been working all week. You're putting me to shame. And Schutze is one of the original WASP, Women Air Force Service Pilots. And again, we are so pleased to have you with us today.
It's great to be here.
Now, you have been to Oshkosh before, correct?
We started coming in 1993.
Okay. And how have you seen it changed over the years?
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's bigger, it's better, and I think this year is the best yet.
Good, good.
It couldn't have been better. I'm glad I came. I almost said no, okay. And then the CAF made it possible. And like I said, I may be dumb, but I'm not stupid.
You came from a very supportive family, and I've read some of your bio. You did announce at the dinner table that you were going to learn how to fly, and everybody kind of chuckled, but you proved them wrong, didn't you?
That's right. I was 7 years old.
Uh-huh.
My father said, I think you youngsters should decide what you're going to do with your life. And he turned to me and he said, you're too young. We'll get to you in a couple of years. And I said, Dad, I'm going to learn how to fly. They all laughed. Later on, I had the laugh. It's the last one.
You learned to fly right after high school, joined the civilian pilot training program, correct?
That's right.
And there was, if I remember correctly, your flight instructor had a quota for as many men as he could get signed up for the program. He could take a woman. Was that correct?
No, the way it was, this was a non-college group.
Okay.
In which you competed for a flight scholarship of 35 hours. So I signed up. I had to take a physical first to get into ground school. There was about 45 to 50 men, two girls in the class. They told us on my first session that at the end of this course, we would all take the government written exam for a private pilot's license. First five highest would get a 35-hour flight scholarship, but only one girl in the five. One of the five.
Okay.
And luckily, I was in the five. I had it for a whole week, and then they took it away from me.
Oh.
And I'm, why? And they said, well, the war in Europe is going poorly. We need, girls don't fly, girls don't go to war. So we're going to give it to number six. And I said, the hell you are. And I fought him, and I said, my argument was, you gave me the flight scholarship, it's mine. You can't give away something that don't belong to you. So in order to shut me up, they gave it back to me.
Determined would be the word, right?
Well, yes, would be a more polite word than what I was thinking of.
What was the airplane that you soloed? What did you solo in?
I soloed in a Piper Cub.
Oh, good. And from there, what did you fly? Was all of your initial training in the Piper Cub?
It was 35 hours, and by that time, I got my private pilot's license, and 2 months later, it was Pearl Harbor, and everything changed. And Cochrane had her program. It was an experiment. Mm-hmm. I applied for it. I had all the requirements. As a matter of fact, I had, in some cases, more time than those who were admitted, but I wasn't old enough, so I had to wait to get old.
When you said Cochrane, just to clarify, that's Jackie Cochrane. She had a program where she was trying to get women into the armed forces. Now, this is sort of running parallel to how we ended up with the actual WASP program, correct?
Well, it was the WASP program. She had approached the government. She approached, she was good friends with Roosevelt. She went to Elder Roosevelt and said, if we go to war, it looks very likely, women are an untapped resource, and that women could fill the jobs within the continental United States. So Crockard had a job at $1 a year. She knew every woman that had a license in the United States. So she had something to deal from.
Right.
The war broke out. We were going to have this experiment. She went to England, took 25 women pilots with her who were highly experienced, and they joined the Air Transport Auxiliary in England. She stayed there, came back, and the program started. Nancy Love had already arranged for 27 women to be hired directly into the ferry command. They had the 200-hour horsepower rating and the time. And Cochran was in charge of the training. The Army would be a regular Army course, and Cochran would be head one. She would be over Nancy Love.
Okay. So where did you do most of your flying?
We did all our flying in a major field, Sweetwater, Texas.
Okay. And from there, where did you go?
I was assigned to Merced Air Force Base in California.
All right. Had you done much traveling before you joined the WASP?
Heavens no, I was fresh out of school.
So what was that like, picking up? Now, you've obviously very determined. You've become a pilot. You made sure that you got that taken care of. Now you go to Sweetwater, Texas from Pennsylvania. Uh-huh. It had to be a little bit of a shock getting off the train there.
No, it was a new adventure. I couldn't wait. Oh, this is great. But I met people from different strata of life. There were six in the bay, and each one was a little different. One was a blackjack dealer. One was an artist who specialized in Japanese art. One was a school teacher. One was a housewife from Hollywood, California. I got to make friends with her because I love movie stars.
Okay.
And then, of course, there was me.
Wow, what a group. And I'm sure you have some stories that are probably very entertaining. We were talking about one just before we went on the air, something about a traveling baseball team, I think.
Yes. To complete the course, the course was the same as the Air Cadets except for the last phrase, in which we did more cross-country flying rather than the formation and the gunnery, which we didn't need. And it was required a 1,000-mile solo cross-country in an AT-6 and a 500 in a steerman without any radio, was all dead reckoning. And this was on the steerman flight, 500. We were issued our duty uniform, the jacket, the slacks, and the flight cap. And before we went on, we had our orders, regular Army orders, and the lieutenant was in charge, and we were told no insignia, absolutely no insignia. Anybody asked who you are, you're a baseball team. You're going around the country to entertain the troops. And that was fine. We ended up at this hotel in Oklahoma City. We were tired. We were hungry, and give us again, remember you're a baseball team, and I'll take care of the paperwork. So we go in, and we're sort of jostling each other when you were young, we're tired. And it gave the impression that we were tied together. And from there came this rumor that we were living proof the Germans were using women in combat, and we were the first group on our way to the prison camp. The next morning, we were having breakfast, and some elderly gentleman, I think he was at least in his mid-30s, came over to the table, and he said, I think it's great of you girls giving up your time to entertain the troops. Damn it, don't you know there's a war on? And we said, yes, how's that going?
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories.
Oh, it is. It is, and asking how it's going, that was really... shifting gears a little bit, that was sort of a sobering moment for you. Your brother AJ was in the war, and you asked him how it was going.
Yes, he was in the Merchant Marine. Uh-huh. He was busy. He was assigned to a ship carrying tanks. And he was able to come home from New York to my place when it wasn't too far. It was Thanksgiving. I had my telegram telling me to report. So it was sort of a farewell for me and a lovely goodbye for him. And I talked to him, and I said, we're Americans. We win wars, and I hope it isn't over before I finish this flight training course. And I said, by the way, AJ, how's war going? And he said to me, well, sis, we're not winning. That was a sober thought. Up to that point, flying was my first primary, and loving country was second. It has changed, and it has changed ever since. Loving country is first. I'll do anything for my country.
With that, we are going to take a short break and come back with more. One of the original WASP, Florence Schutze Reynolds, so pleased to have you here this morning. You're listening to From the Stand on EIA Radio.